Before we begin today's sermon, let's take a moment to put our hands together in veneration to the Supreme One, the One who, with His utmost wisdom, was able to penetrate the veils of ignorance, understand the nature of nature, not only liberate himself, but with a determination to liberate all sentient beings, fulfilling his paramitas, he attained the supreme bliss of Nibbana. So let's take a few moments to worship the Tathagata by chanting the Namaskara 3 times altogether and with me. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. How was our week? I think it's a good question. You know, every week we start off with, how was your week? It's because it's a time where we can reflect. This week, how much time did I spend with the Dhamma? How much time did I spend, in the clutches of Mara? How much time did I spend, contemplating, listening to the Dhamma, meditating? Because, something that you hear in lots of sermons as well as sermons by our teachers as well, is that Saturdays or Sundays, the weekends, is a day that we all come together and we listen to sermons. Or sermon either by, our teachers, by myself. And that's only one day of the week. Now, as most of you are Sita Shravika Shravikas and Anagarikas Anagarikas, and as well as our monks, we do get the opportunity to stay amongst the association of noble people. But then there are, the people who listen to these sort of talks once a week. And it was very funny because I was talking to, some very young children and their parents. And these parents came up to me and said, my child is only 5-6 years old. I really want them to walk on the path, to be a good child, not Nibbana. That's put to the side. But I wanted them to be a good child, right? And be someone that will, be a benefit to society, right? Although they were 5 and 6 years old, they had a very good sense of intelligence. They were able to understand things. However, the one thing I told the parent is, I will be able to talk to them, and our monks will be able to talk to them only a couple times. Say we do talk once a week. That's 1 hour or 2 hours per week. In that 1 hour, they will be surrounded by the Dhamma, the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha. Where they'll be, where they may come to Siumaga and be in the association of amazing people. However, the moment they step outside, 24/7. Because if you think about it, your own dreams don't help you attain Nibbana. Because your dreams take you to, places and things, but when do you ever in a dream think, this is anicca dukkha anatta? Very rarely. So even your dreams are 24/7, you're getting views opposite. So even though we may live and breathe in the monastery as Sita Shravaka Shravakas Anagarikas and as monks, still there'll be times where, you're not in, even though you are in the monastery, you are not in the monastery. What I mean is, even though you are in the four walls, right, the fence that separates the monastery from the outside world, even though you are within those walls, you live and breathe. Sometimes. Now, depending on each and every one of us, that time could be different. But you'll spend time in this world with Mara. So we have to be very careful here. We have to understand how much time am I using to contemplate. This is why, starting with the question, how was your week? Honestly, you should end the day with asking the question, how was your day? How much, give a percentage. How much of this day did I spend, you know, contemplating or with the Dhamma? How much of the day did I spend outside the Dhamma? So technically, how much time did I spend inside the monastery? And how much time did I spend outside the monastery? Again, monastery doesn't mean the place. Monastery means where your heart or your mind is. Now, don't worry. In the beginning, it's hard. Because the path Nibbana is a path. It's a journey. In the beginning, you know, if you look at your own past, right, you listen to one sermon, two sermon, weekly sermon, and that's just how it started off. Therefore, you only had 1 or 2 hours. So, in an entire week, you know, 0.5%. Then 1%. 1 became 2, 2 became 3, and this journey will take you along this path. There'll be a day and a time where, you know, you'll be able to say, 75% I spent with the Dhamma. 25% I wasn't able to. There'll be a day and a time where you can say, 90% I was with the Dhamma. 10%, you know, I missed it here and there. But the day and time will come where you'll be able to say, 99% of the time, I was with the Dhamma. Just like 1%, I was outside. And finally, the day and time will come where you think, my entire time was with the Dhamma. Not a single second, not a single minute, not a single hour did I spend outside. When that day happens, you can understand, you are either an arahat nuanse, arahat mahin nuanse, or on the verge. You can guarantee that. Because you're not giving, because what you are doing is you're feeding the mind with what? Dhamma. So every day, have a time, you know, before you fall asleep. Now, I had a great fortune of talking to some of our monks this week as well. I get to talk to them every day. I'm very lucky. I got to talk to one of them. And he says that every day he goes through, he calls it the Vate Vandana. Where every day before he falls asleep, so sometimes, you know, he's up late at night, right? Do you know, planning for things, and you know, he has lots of responsibilities and duties. So he may be up at, you know, 1, 2, 3 a.m. But still, no matter what, before he falls asleep, he takes a path every day. The first thing he does is he goes to the Velimuru. Depending on how tired he is, he will spend 5, maybe 10, half an hour in the Velimuru. Before he leaves Velimaluwa, he will worship Guru Hamduru, Nayakamduru, and all the higher, all the monks above him. Then he makes his way down this path, all the way to the Buddha Mandir, the Buddha Shrine, where he will spend 5 minutes chanting Buddha Guru. After that, after worshiping the Buddha, he'll make his way to where? The Chaitya, right, where he will spend 5 minutes chanting Arya Maitri. Then he'll make his way all the way to the Sanghavasa, where if it's late at night, most monks are asleep. But he'll make sure he'll worship at least 3 monks. They may be asleep, but at least he worships 3 monks, and then he goes to sleep. right? And then, wait, still not done. After that, he goes to bed, sits on the bed, transfers merits, and he lies down, and he reflects about his day. And as he's reflecting, right, if he's finished reflecting, then he says that, you know, sometimes if he has time, right, he's not fallen asleep yet, he would, you know, in his head, think about the bliss of Nibbana. In his head, think, and with that idea, he falls asleep. Now, that is the idea that we should all have. Now, of course, some of you may not be able to go through, before you go to sleep, go through everything here because, you know, you know, devotees have to leave by 6:30, right? However, in your head at least, you know, take a moment and, you know, have a small night routine. Doesn't need to be long. Like, his one may take half an hour. Doesn't need to be long. Take just 5 minutes. But have a night routine where at the end you are able to, you know, reflect on your day, the day that has passed. See how much of that time did you spend. See how much of the time you think you have wasted. And go forward. Now, like I said, there's no need to worry. You know, you can say that, you know, oh, I spent, you know, only two hours, or, you know, I only spent, even I went to the value model for 2 hours. Even that 2 hours, I don't think I was able to contemplate for more than half an hour. So, you know, percentage-wise, you know, that's, you know, 2% with Dhamma and 98% outside. Oh, what a horrible person I am. No, this is not for you to feel bad about yourself. This is for you to motivate yourself, thinking, okay, today's 2%, tomorrow, 2.5. The next day, 3. Don't give yourself such high expectations. You know, tomorrow I'm going to spend every single hour, because that's impossible. Instead, give yourself a small goal. You know, in the value, I spent 2 hours in the value model. You know, today I only was able to do 5 minutes of contemplation. Tomorrow, 10. Today, whilst I was eating alms, whilst I was consuming my alms, I wasn't able to contemplate. Tomorrow, I would at least spend 2 minutes contemplating. Give yourself a small goal, a small achievement. Because the smaller the achievement, you know you can do. I mean, you contemplate for 5 minutes, can you not do 6? The next day, 6 is very easy, it's just another minute. But if you say, today I did 5, tomorrow I'm going to do half an hour. You know, we have this idea, maybe no. I can't do that. I can't do that. And you know, although we have, you know, although ego is a feeling, we all have ego, because we all have ignorance. So we have to use ignorance for our benefit. You know, we all love and enjoy achieving small achievements, right? These small achievements, like, you know, it's like, you know, today I did this, today or tomorrow I'm going to do this, and this small achievement, achieving that, gives you the motivation to do more. I mean, this is why your teachers will tell you, you know, remember your past. Who were you in the past? What sort of things you did in the past? Because once you remember your past, you remember how much I have changed. Of course, it's rooted in ignorance. But that ignorance gives you the motivation to keep on going. As you understand, as you go forward, ignorance will decrease. Therefore, you know, the feeling of I will decrease. But until then, use ignorance to your benefit. I mean, if any way ego arises, if whether we like it or not, ego arises because of ignorance, then why not use it for our benefit? Like, you know, like how our ancient kings have said, you know, the rain that falls from the sky, let's not waste a drop of rain that falls from the sky. Well, let's not waste ego. If ego anywhere arises, why not use it for our benefit? to motivate us to go forward, to motivate us to you know, take the next step. This is the thing, you know, we are all very fortunate, we are all surrounded, you know, submerged deep into the Dhamma. You know, I don't think any one of us can ever say that, you know, I don't think we have enough Dhamma. As a Siddha Shravaka Shravika, as an Anagarika Anagarika, as a monk, you know, we spend a lot of time, you know, as if I talk about my experience, you know, from 4:30 in the morning, we talk about what? The Nyaya, the Dhamma. So each and everyone has the Dhamma. The only thing that we don't have is this, you know, this ability to, or this, the actual path. We have everything we need. We have our instruments. We have, you know, the compass. We have everything we need. However, what we don't have is the path. The path of contemplation. Now, I was very fortunate, again, you know, I was able to listen to one of our monks give a small sermon. And one thing he talks about is, you know, how we use the Dhamma to trick ourselves. How we use the truth to trick ourselves. I mean, we all know about karma vipaka, right? When we do an action, we have karma, we do karma, and, you know, it comes back as vipaka. Do you use that as an excuse? Do you use that as an excuse thinking, you know, this is their vipaka. You know, they aren't able, you know. For example, a very good one is, you know, let's say you are listening to, you know, your teacher, or best one. Let's say you fall asleep in a sermon. Let's just see if you blame it on something. You say, you know, that's my vipaka, you know, there's nothing I could have done, you know, all the causes had aligned in that sort of way, so I fell asleep. Now, if that's the idea, then the problem is what? There's no problem here whatsoever. Therefore, you know what? Next day, again, the causes aligned and therefore this happened. When we don't realize that the causes have aligned, I agree 100%. We have the Dhamma. We have the wisdom. Therefore, we know that, you know, everything is cause and effect. When the causes come together, we have an effect. Perfect. But we don't realize that if the effect is something that is harmful, then we have to find a way to get rid of the causes. You know, it's very easy to go and say, you know, I'm gonna, you know, the reason why this happened was because of this, and therefore, you know, there's nothing, it's not my fault. I mean, I was talking to some young children, and then, you know, after they've learned, you know, the theory of karma and vipaka, right? Everything is my vipaka. My deeds will give results to my action. So whenever his brother was to hit him, he would hit his brother back because that's his vipaka. Not thinking about, you know, the karma they accumulate. See, this is why the Buddha says, you know, the truth is amazing. The truth will set you free. I agree. However, the truth in the hands of a person who has a malicious intent, the truth is harmful. This is why the Buddha says that, you know, the truth is like a snake. Now, you've all probably, sometime in your life, ever seen, you know, these nature channels where, they, you know, there's a person who goes around looking for animals and they introduce an animal and they say, you know, this is a python, right? Or this is a viper. And then they take a hook and they show you the viper. If they were ever to hold a poisonous snake, where do they hold the snake? If they ever were to hold a poisonous snake, where do they hold it? By the tail, right? It's the easiest option. Tail. Because if you hold the snake by the tail, what happens? Very easily, the snake will wrap around and will sting, will bite, will inject its venom into you. Then where do you hold it? By the neck? Like if we had a snake, where do you hold the snake? There's only one place you can ever hold a snake. Where's that? By the head. Same with the truth. The truth, you can only hold the truth at one place. You can only use the truth in the right way if you're going to help yourself. If you have any other intention with the truth, to help, even if it was, you know, to protect one's, you know, to protect one's, technically to protect one's ego, or to you know, whenever to justify one's actions, then what you are doing is wrong. Then what you're doing is completely wrong. Because what you are doing is you're tricking your own, you're using the truth, you're using the Dhamma to trick your own mind, saying that what I did was okay. What I did was perfectly fine. A good example would be, you know, now as part of the sasana, as part of the Buddha's ministry, you know, the Buddha says, you know, protect what you have. So he gave things for the mind, which was the Dhamma, and he gave things for the body. Because if you ask yourself, what is it that you truly need? You only need five things. What are the five things? Our basic requirements, we only need five things. Clothes to wear, food to eat, what else? Medicine if we're sick, and a shelter to protect us from the sun, the rain, and whatsoever. And for example, yesterday nearby we had a very, very windy storm at 2 o'clock, right? If we did not have a house, we would have been drenched and we would come here very sick, right? So, you know, we have these four things for the body. And then we have the Dhamma for the mind. We have the truth for the mind. We have the understanding for the mind. Because, you know, you can say, well, isn't a basic requirement? Entertainment, isn't that not a basic requirement? Of course not. Because what is entertainment? In entertainment is used to do what? To forget one's problems. Just think about it. Why do people spend time, you know, watching a movie? Why do people watch movies? What is the purpose? Now, it's very easy to say, you know, I watch a movie because I love stories. But more than stories, you use movies to forget what? One's problems. Because when you're watching a movie, you have forgotten about your own problems. And now you're indulging yourself in a problem of someone else's. Because you know, in 1.5 hours to 2 hours, or however long the movie is, those problems will be resolved. Therefore, you're very happy to watch a movie. That's why if a movie ends with a cliffhanger, you cannot wait until what? Or a TV episode ends on a cliffhanger. That's why you can't wait until the next episode. Because you want to solve that problem. So why do we watch a movie? Again, to solve our own problem. Well, not to solve our problem, but to forget our problem and solve something else. What about music? Why do we listen to music? We listen to music, the same thing. We have problems, you know, we have, you know, this coming up, that coming up, you know, I have to do this, I have to do that. But you know what? Music makes it better, because why? When you're listening to music, you are suppressing your own problems and thinking about what you're hearing and enjoying it. You're using it to forget your own problems. So entertainment has been used. We use entertainment more than to enjoy ourselves. We use it to, you know, hide away our problems so we can solve it another time. So entertainment is not a basic necessity. Instead, a necessity is finding a way to solve those problems. Is it not? If you are stressed, isn't your necessity, right? Your basic requirement to find a way to get rid of stress? Or is it to find a way to watch a movie to forget about stress? Which one? The thing, your basic requirement is to understand. This is why we have five things. Now the Buddha talks about, you know, these four things and not to waste it. Now it's very easy to say, I have what I have, and this is because of my vipaka. You know, I live this sort of life because of the actions I've done in the past. Okay, understandable. But because of the Dhamma, because of the truth, you are now wasting. Because, you know, once you understand cause and effect, you can get rid of this idea of waste. What is wasting? You know, if fuel, oxygen, temperature comes together as a fire, what is wasted there? Nothing is wasted. Everything has been used. Right? You know, it's just, that's how it is. And so people will use the Dhamma to trick themselves. You know, sometimes it's best to take a step back. Just take a step back and see life as it is. You know, we are very fortunate to have the Dhamma with us. You know, we get to listen to sermons, we get to listen to all these stuff. But, you know, all of this can cloud our own vision. Sometimes it's best to take a step back and use the Dhamma for what it's for. It should be used for what? Just like you hold the snake at the head, you should use the Dhamma to solve the head of the problems that you face. Then what is that head? See, if we were to talk about the problems that we face, we can actually group them into certain parts. We can group all our problems. If we took all problems, we're able to group them. Simply as, there are things I want, but I cannot get. There are things I want, I can get it, but I can't, not now. If you can group everything in the way that there are things I like, I want. There are things I don't like, I don't want. Very simply, we can group some of our problems in these two categories. I like, I want. I don't like, I don't want. There's nothing in this world that you don't like that you want. Tell me one thing in this world that you don't like, but you want. Should I give you an example? Why do we love tragic stories? We don't want it to happen, but we like it. No, actually, you like a tragic story because you like the feeling of what? Sympathy. You like the feeling of feeling, what horrible things has happened to this person. And you have that small feeling that, you know, that was a horrible thing. I like that feeling of sympathy. So even that is something that you like. So you want something, you get it. You don't want something, you don't want it. And then, you know, there's something that you want and haven't got yet. There's something that you don't want and still haven't got yet. The time where you don't have something is a time where you feel what? The time that you feel what? You feel vexed. For example, you know, you all remember the feeling that you had when you're at school waiting for your results. You know, you've done an exam and you're waiting for the results. What do you feel? So there's something you want, you haven't got it yet. You don't know whether you've passed or failed. You're now waiting. What is that feeling of waiting? That feeling of waiting is something that we call what? Vexation. You're anxious. You're waiting for the next thing. You're waiting for what is my result? Am I going to pass or fail? Am I going to get 100% or 99%? Am I going to get 90 or 80? And now you're asking these questions. And now you're feeling this buildup of pressure inside of you. But if we were to ask ourselves, why do we feel either one of these? You can draw a line and say, well, I want this to happen because there is something that I want. There is something that I want. For example, the only reason you stress for a test is because you what? Want to pass. I mean, have you never done a test where you don't want to pass? And, you know, say for example, say a teacher gives you a test and doesn't say the test, just gives you some questions. And you answer the questions as normal as possible. Then they mark it and they say, oh, you got this question wrong. It's not a test. You'll be upset that you got the question wrong because you want to get the question right. But you don't want to, you're not stressed about it. You don't write these 10 questions under a lot of stress because you don't know. You don't want. Whether it's something, whether you get what you want or you don't get what you want, whether you receive what you don't like or don't receive what you don't like, there's always something that you like. Now, where does this idea of liking come from? Are we born with the things that we like? Do we know what we like when we're born? Do we know about ice cream when we're born? Do we know about chocolate when we're born? Do we know about cake when we're born? Do we know that we don't like tests when we're born? No, these are things that we have grown. As we were growing up, we have learned. It is something that we've learned. It is something that we've been almost conditioned to think. For example, I'll tell you a time where the first day I was able, I've ever drunk coffee. Now, I think I was yay high, probably 5 or 6 years old, and a relative was drinking coffee, and I was like, ooh, what's that? He's like, oh, this is coffee. Have some. And I remember having it for the first time, and it was very bitter. I think this person loves having the blackest of black of coffees with like no sugar. And I hated it. From that moment onwards, coffee was something that I don't like. So anything, if I hear the word coffee, I say no. So I remember once I was one of my friend's mothers, she loves making iced coffee. Now, me being polite when she asked, do you want some iced coffee, knowing that she loves making it, I said yes. Now, remember, liking or not liking isn't about what it tastes like. It's not about what it tastes like. Instead, it's about what you felt at that moment. For example, that coffee was bitter. The first coffee I ever drank was very bitter. I didn't like bitter taste, right? Because I had the view that sweet was good. Having sweet stuff is good. Therefore, bitter was against. I like sweet, therefore I don't like bitter. Because I have that feeling, now I've connected bitter with bad. You know, so that's why young children don't like bitter things. And bitter medicines, you know, what do parents do when they give the child bitter medicines? They add sugar. Now, so the bitter has been connected with not good. Therefore, now when I had coffee, now I made the connection. Coffee is equal to not good. So if I ever heard the word coffee, I connected with not good. So had coffee, and then she made iced coffee, gave it to me. I reluctantly had to drink it all, right? You know, being polite and whatnot. She asked me, was it good? What did I say? Yeah, it was very good. And without asking, she poured me another cup and said, you know, drink some more. And again, reluctantly, I drank some more. Luckily, she didn't ask a second time, or else I would have, never gone there again. But again, why did this happen? Because the connection was made. Coffee is equal bad. Therefore, coffee I don't like. Now, growing up, as you get to a time where, you know, you have to stay awake at night to study, what do friends say? You know, yesterday I had a very strong cup of coffee and I was up all night studying. And then they say, you know, have you ever had a latte before? A cappuccino before? Right? Have you ever had an espresso before? Now I remember, you know, I used to love chocolate. And so, you know, when my friends introduced me to, what's it called? Coffee with chocolate. There we go. Mocha. And they're like, you know, there's coffee with chocolate. I was like, yes, I want to try that. And then what? Now the connection between coffee equal bad is changed to what? Coffee? Good. So if it was coffee that made me happy or sad here and there, that means it should have been permanent. When you like something, it should be permanent. You always like it or you always don't like it, but that's not it. It can change. Why does it change? Because there's always something that's causing it. Like I said, it's a condition. You've been conditioned. You have been conditioned to think that, you know, chocolate is equal good, coffee equal bad. When I receive chocolate, equal happy. When I receive coffee, equal bad. But you can change the conditioning just like you can condition an animal. You can condition an animal the exact same way. You give them something they like, or pretend that you're giving something they like, and they think, oh, I like this, therefore this makes me happy. That's why you can train a dog to be happy when you give him a click. I mean, when you click, does a dog receive anything? Do they receive any sort of treat? No, but when they click, they give food. When click, food. Click, food. So when they're treated, they give a click, and now the dog's happy. No food, but clicked. Because it's conditioned. Where does that come from? The idea, this connection that is made. Now, why is there a connection made? Where does that connection come from? Where does that connection come from? So let's look at this, right? So again, whether happy or sad, both come from this idea of what you wanted, right? This idea of what you wanted has to come from, you know, wanting, or this idea of wanting comes from let me give you an example before that. If you've ever looked at the sky, right, and seen the clouds, you know how sometimes clouds can make a shape? You know, clouds can make shapes. You look up in the sky and you see a cloud and it's a shape of a boat. When did you ever make yourself think, you know, I want that boat to be there, you know, I love that boat, I want this boat? When did you ever think that? You don't really, because you know that once that boat is there, the boat's only there for how long? For how long? For a minute? For an hour? For 2 hours? How long is the boat going to be there? Well, the boat's going to be there for you know, maybe a couple seconds. You know, the wind blows, and now it made a shape of a boat. You know, the next moment, the wind's going to blow again, and it's now going to change the cloud. So you know that you don't, you know that, I don't really, you know, I like the boat. However, I don't make the idea that I want this boat to be there. Because you've realized that boat is what? According, it is, you know, the boat is there for, because of the wind. When the wind changes, the boat will change. Or another example is that, you know, as children, sometimes, you know, you have these, you know, have you done shadows before, shadow puppets, where you go to a wall, right, and the torch, right, you know, little children, we do these, and they make, you know, the, you know, dogs and birds, and, you know, children, like, they enjoy these sort of things. Now, wouldn't it be very silly to think there's an actual dog on the wall? You know, you make the shadow of a dog. Wouldn't it be very silly to think there's an actual dog there? Or there's a shadow, the silhouette of a bird. Wouldn't it be very silly to think that, you know, there's a bird on the wall? We know what? That bird is a what? Is a shadow. That the bird is a shadow. If the bird is a shadow, is there an actual bird on that wall? How can you prove there's no bird there? How can you prove there's no bird there? Turn off the light. Turn off the torch. Or remove the hands. Once you remove the hands, is there a bird? So the bird is there for as long as there's a light source and your hands make, you know, is blocking that light source. So there's an object. That's why there's a shadow. But for a young child, what's on the wall? For a young child, what's on the wall? Mom, there's a dog on the wall. Because in their heads, there's an actual dog there. Because they don't realize that's a shadow that you can change. That's why, you know, they find it really funny when, you know, you can change the shape from a bird to you know, a spider to, you know, a dog. Because this idea of change is very strange to them, because they see a dog and they think there's a dog on the screen, on the wall. Now there's a bird on the wall. But we understand that it's a shadow. Same thing here. The reason that we think that something is gonna make me happy is because we think that that is what? That is a fixed thing. That instead of seeing a shadow, you're now seeing a fixed, you're seeing a fixed dog on the wall. For example, let's take the example of coffee, right? What does coffee taste like? What does coffee taste like? Now, the moment I say the word coffee, each and every one of you has an image and the taste of coffee in your head. Now, each and every one of our coffees will be different. What cup is it in? What sort of cup is it in? Is it in a big cup? Small cup? Is there a sauce under the cup? Is that coffee sweet? How many sugars? What else do you add? Is that caramel in it? Is that chocolate in it? When I say the word coffee, you have an idea. You have a taste. And now that idea of coffee is now projected onto the wall. And now you're looking for what? That projection. Do you not? This is why, you know, how do you say the cup of coffee is too sweet? How do you say that? To say that something is too sweet, what do you have to have done? Is this big or small? Is this big or small? Is this big and small now? Now it's much smaller, right? Because, you know, it's smaller. Compared to what? This. The only way you can say this is smaller is when you compare it. So when you drink a coffee and you say it's too sweet, that means you're comparing it. Comparing it to what? This mental image you have of a coffee. Imagine you one day go to, you know, a coffee shop, right? And you ask for, say, a latte. And instead of giving you, you know, a normal latte, the latte is green. Would you drink it? Would you drink it? Unless it's near Halloween, you would not drink it. Why is that? The image of a latte is you project that image to the outside. Now you're now comparing. Is what I am seeing actually there? Is it close to my image of a coffee? If yes, you think, oh, that's a good coffee. Sweet. Is it not too sweet? Not too bitter? Perfect. If it's too sweet, you say it's too sweet. If it's too bitter, it's too bitter. This is why, you know, you will never be able to drink the same coffee as the coffee in your mind. Because in your mind, your coffee is what? The best coffee you've ever tasted. Now, this image of this mental image of the coffee is something that you have, is a view that you have, an image of a fixed thing that you have. However, what does coffee really taste like? Imagine you had no tongue. What does coffee taste like? Let's say you have your tongue stops working. What does coffee taste like now? Coffee doesn't have a taste. The taste of coffee isn't something that's in the coffee. Instead, where is it? It's something that the mind perceives when the coffee comes into the contact with what? With the tongue. That's why, you know, you can have, artificial sweetness where, you know, you're putting artificial sweetness. So there is no sugar, but you taste what? Sweet. So people, you know, if you're trying to go on a diet or, you know, you have diabetes, people will have artificial sweetness. But they still taste as sweet, but there's no sugar in it. Why is that? This taste of sweet isn't something that's in the coffee. It's something that's made in the mind. So let's say you go to the coffee shop and now, you know, you've been served a green coffee. Right? And when it's not anywhere near Halloween, right? Or any sort of celebrative festival. Now, this color of green is also where? Color of green is also where? It's also something the mind, it's felt in the mind. Because it's not something that's actually, you know, something that the cup or the coffee actually has. Because without the eyes, because your eyes can only pick up what? What does your eyes pick up? What does your eyes detect? Color? Your eyes can't detect color. What does it detect? Light rays. Depending on the frequency, your mind will perceive different colors. For example, you know, you see this, you say blue. Let's change the light. Like we change the light to, you know, red. What color do you see now? You see black. But if you're seeing, you know, the color of the pen, no matter what color the light is, you should be able to see what? Blue. But instead, you're seeing not color, you're seeing the light rays. That goes to your eyes, is translated, and therefore the image, this image is something that is in the mind. But what about the coffee itself? What is coffee? If we were to, you know, take a very simple coffee, let's just take a black coffee here. Simply, to make coffee, you need what? Water and coffee. To make it easy, we'll say coffee particles. Right? Whether it's you know, whether it's something that's instantly dissolved or it's whether, you know, there's, you know, the you know, coffee powder or whatnot. For the argument's sake, we'll call it coffee particles. This is why you can separate these two things, can't you? You can take a cup of coffee and separate the water and the coffee particles. I don't like the word particles here, because it sounds like, you know, coffee is something that is always going to be there. For argument's sake, we'll call it coffee extract. You can separate water and the coffee extract. So technically, you could actually separate these two things out and have a cup of water and a cup of coffee extract. But you put them together, you have what? Black coffee. You add a bit of milk, and then you have what? Milk coffee. Add a bit of chocolate, then you have what? So what is the difference between a black coffee and a mocha? Different arrangement. Arrangement of what? Arrangement of ingredients. So let's say you don't like black coffee, but you like mocha. What does that mean? Does that mean that you like chocolate and milk, and therefore you like mocha? Or does that mean that you don't like black coffee, therefore you don't like the coffee part of mocha? No, you are projecting. Just like the shadow that the child is looking at and it says, oh, the dog on the wall. You are projecting the image and saying that this is what is there. Once you project that image, now you think, oh, I love that. Oh, I love this coffee. This coffee is amazing. What shop is it from? I like this shop now. I'm going to go there, you know, next week at the same time. I'm going to come to the same place because I enjoy this coffee. The coffee that your mind has perceived. The coffee that your mind has created. Let's say it's your first day ever having coffee. Right? And the barista has accidentally added something that's not supposed to be there. I don't know, let's say, do you add honey to coffee? I don't know. Do you? I don't think so. Never heard of it. Let's say the barista has accidentally was making, say, some honey tea on the other side, had accidentally used the same spoon to mix your coffee. Now you drink coffee for the first time and you taste it. Your idea of coffee now has what? The taste of honey in it. So now you project, every time you have coffee, you're not projecting this idea. Now you have something, you have a projection. You're projecting onto every coffee. When will you ever receive it? The next time the barista makes the same mistake again. Or you find out that, you know, it was a mistake. So we are attaching ourselves not onto the coffee, but onto the projection that we've made. We use this to make an image inside, and then we project it back out and say, oh, I like this pen. You don't like this pen, you like the projection. You like the mental image the mind makes. So coming back to this, you don't like the light or the hand, you like the shadow. You know, whenever, you know, let's say, you know, you're showing a child a shadow and the lights go, or the torch runs out of battery. The child is upset. They start crying because of what? The shadow is gone. But if the child was to understand, the shadow is what? Is an effect of what? The causes. Now what? The child will look at this and say, oh, the dog is gone. Or the dog is gone. They may not know it's a shadow. But we'll know the dog will come back when the torch is there. The dog will come back when the hand is there. Not just any hand, the hand in the correct configuration. The image of a dog will appear. If the child knows where a shadow comes from, how can the child attach itself to the dog? Instead, it will understand that it's not the dog that it likes. The dog on the wall is a projection in the mind. You see, this is what we have to understand. That as we're going through in life, because, you know, what we don't realize is we have to see, I'm not telling you to look at this and think of an elephant. Every time you look at this, think of an elephant. Think of elephant. Elephant, elephant, elephant. I mean, that's what we normally do. We do this a lot. We look at something and we try to think of it to be something else. For example, people who are scared of spiders, right, will think, okay, this is not a spider, this is a fluffy bunny. It's a fluffy bunny. Fluffy bunny. Why? So they can get rid of the fear of what? Spider. They look at something and they try to pretend it's something else. I'm here showing you that don't pretend it's something else. Look at it for what it really is. This pen is a projection of the mind. As in, there is something here. But the eye, this, you know, the shape, the color, the texture of the pen is what the mind makes. And that mind makes it because of the causes. For example, let's say I leave this in the sun for about a week. What will happen to the color? If I leave this in the Sri Lankan sun for about a week, forget a week, about 3 days, what will happen to the color? It will fade. Why does it fade? Is it because the pen's color is fading? No, instead, the causes that give rise to the color of pen, of the pen, the blue color, has changed. Now you're seeing the world to be what? Cause and effect. Causes come together to give rise to an effect. At what moment? At which moment? Can you see the pen now? Can you see the pen now? Excuse me. Can you see the pen? Can you see the blue pen now? You can't, because it can only be seen when what happens? When the causes come at this moment. Now, what's really funny is that, you know, the causes come at this moment to give rise to the pen. If I ask you to remember what the pen looked like, are you remembering what the pen looked like 5 minutes ago? Are you remembering what the pen looked like 5 minutes ago? Or are you remembering it now? Are you remembering the pen that was there 5 minutes ago? Or are you remembering a pen are you remembering the pen at this moment? Will you ever see that pen again? I mean, have you ever been on that holiday that you really like? You know, that holiday that was the best holiday of your life. And yet, you want to go on it again. Why is that? To experience the same feeling that I had 3 years ago. Can you ever experience that same feeling that you had 3 years ago? I mean, let's say you went to the beach. You love the beach. You look at the beach and you think, wow, this is an amazing beach. And, you know, you go back home and 3 years go by and you think, you know, I remember that beach. It was such a beautiful beach. Have you never been to that beach again and thought, oh, this is not what I remember. I thought the water was more blue. I thought, you know, that was like better, you know, the weather was better. Because you take that image and you snapshot it and you think about it in the past. And you think that past image is what it is. But actually, you can only remember things at this moment. You can pull things from memories to this moment. You can't remember what was there 5 minutes ago. You can take a You can take that snapshot and remember at this moment. I mean, you know, we spend so much time thinking about our past, thinking about things that have gone, thinking about what has happened. And we look at the past and we suffer at which moment? This moment. Something is gone, we start suffering at this moment. I shouldn't have said that. I shouldn't have done that. Why did I do that? And you're suffering at this moment. That part is gone. But not only that, we look into the future for something that has not happened yet, and yet we suffer that at this moment as well. I have an exam coming up in 3 weeks. It's in 3 weeks, but right now, what are you feeling? 3 weeks, oh my God, an exam's coming up. How am I going to prepare for this? And you're suffering now for an exam that's 3 weeks away. Because you feel that, you know, I have my future, I have a past, when actually all you have is this moment. When can you ever go back to the past? When can you ever travel to the future? You only have this moment, but yeah, you suffer either way. Because you project, you take your mental image and you project to the past, you project to the future and think that this is my life. When actually, all you have is which moment? This one. All you have is this moment. Not a future, not a past, but a present. So the next time you go to a coffee shop, for most of you, that's going to be when? Maybe never. But the next time you go to the coffee shop and you order a coffee and you're waiting for the coffee to arrive, don't look and project the coffee in your past to the coffee in the future. Don't project the coffee in your past to the coffee in the future. Instead, take what is there, and accept it. Take what is there and accept it. Because that is what is there at that moment. The only reason you can say the coffee is too bitter is because it's mental projection. Something that is not there. The only thing you can say, you know, this coffee is not hot enough. Right, you know, can you reheat it? The only reason you can do that is because, you know, you're projecting the past to the future. Instead, take this moment as it is. Enjoy this moment, can't we? Enjoy what you have at this moment. You know, eye object comes together and gives you sight. Enjoy that. But instead we think, look, this whiteboard, oh no, there's something here. Let's remove this part and look at a beautiful whiteboard. You're projecting what you want here, not enjoying what you have at this moment. See, ear comes in contact with vibration that gives you sound. Enjoy it. Instead of thinking, can't we change it? Can't we do something to it? Can we keep this for longer? Can't we keep this for longer? Can we make this shorter? And now you have your opinion. Instead of accepting what you hear for what it is, when the causes come together, you give rise to the effect. Enjoy it. Like I said, all we have to do is see the world for what it truly is. I'm not saying to look at this and think of an elephant. I'm saying, look at this and think of it for what, or look at it for what it truly is. A manifestation of causes. When the causes come together, we have this effect which we call a pen. Look at it for what it truly is. Look at it for what it truly is. This is a manifestation. Causes coming together to give rise to an effect. This is why you can change this. How? You can remove piece by piece. What happens to the pen? What happens if I was to remove every piece out of this? What happens to the pen? Nothing happens to the pen because the pen was just an effect. Instead, the moment you start breaking the pieces out, you're left with what? A different manifestation. Enjoy the moment for what you have. Whether you get what you want or you don't get what you want, the only reason you're happy or sad is because there's something that you want. You're looking at the wall and you're thinking the shadow is the dog. Instead, once you see it for the fact that it truly is, it's a shadow. A shadow that is cause and effect. For as long as there's a light source, for as long as there's an object, there is the dog. When the causes change, when the causes alter, when the configuration of hands start to change, the shadow will also what? See, the next time you're walking outside, so today's not a sunny day, but next time on a sunny day when you walk out, you see a shadow. Look at the shadow and think, you know, this is what? A manifestation. Shadow is only there for as long as the light source, the object, is there. You know, some people will look at the rain and say, oh, hot horror, no, why is it raining? You know, today is such a gloomy day. They're taking this moment, projecting into the future and thinking, you know, today it's raining, it's going to rain. How long is it going to rain for? When you hear this rain, how long is it going to rain for? It sounds as though it's going to rain the entire day. You know, my entire day is ruined. As you know, I thought it's going to be really sunny. You know, I was going to take a stroll over here, do this over there. You know, I'm going to, dry my clothes today, but no, it's raining. What horrible stuff. And you're projecting the present into the future. But who knows, in another 5 minutes, this rain can completely clear out. Instead, look at this moment and enjoy this moment. Enjoy this moment. See for what it truly is. Causes coming together to give rise to an effect. Because technically, the only reason you know it's raining is because what? Sound. Who knows, our amazing technician, the IT team in the back, could be playing the sound of rain. How do you know? How do you know? Okay, you can stop it now. I'm joking. But you've already projected it, you know, it's going to rain throughout today's entire event. It's going to rain, and we're going to have to be under umbrellas and all that. You're projecting something that hasn't happened yet. No, take this moment and enjoy it. Sound, right? The ear vibration give rise to sound. Okay. Sight or eye and object or eye and light comes into contact and gives you sight. Okay. What's wrong with that? But no, it's raining. My entire day is ruined. I wish it would, you know, curse you, weather. And, you know, people will see. Once you project, you always want someone to blame. You know, why? So either whether it's God or whether it's Vipaka or whether, you know, the Roman god of rain, right? There is someone that you want to say, why did you make it rain today? Because you want to blame someone because you can't accept the present moment. The rain is your teacher. It's giving you a lesson. Listen to the lesson and learn. Every patter of rain is saying, you can hear this, at this moment. You can hear this at this moment. I mean, especially the weather at our monastery is the most unpredictable weather possible. You hear heavy rain now, in 2 minutes it's going to clear out, and then another 5 minutes, it's going to rain very heavily again. What's it teaching you? When causes come together, the effect arises now. Now. It's teaching you a lesson. Be a student and be ready to learn. I mean, thanks to our mind, right? The mind with this, the ignorance of how the world works, our mind makes lots of stories. I mean, trust me when I say this. Most of the problems that you feel is because you are crafting a story. I mean, it's something that a mind that doesn't realize the truth, the reality of the world puts together. Because they don't see it to be, you know, causes come together to give rise to this moment. Instead, they see, you know, this person didn't smile at me today. That means this person must be angry. He must be angry because of this that I did yesterday. And connecting the dots of random events and making a story. He looked at me, and, you know, he didn't smile. I must have done something wrong. What did I do wrong? Oh, he probably thinks I did this, but I didn't do that though. And now you're creating a story. Who knows? It can only happen at this moment. That's why the past is history. The future is a mystery. But the present is a gift. That's why we call it the present. Enjoy this moment. See this moment for what it truly is. Now, again, all we have to do is what? It's an elephant, 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 elephant. No, just look at life as it is. Understand the world as it is. Cause and effect. The cause come together to give rise to an effect. That's all. I mean, if you look at it, all the teachings that the Buddha has ever talked about, or 84,000 teachings, all talk about cause and effect nature of the world, the dukkha nature of the world, the anatta nature of the world. All 84,000 can be boxed into three groups. And these three groups can be boxed into the same thing as nature. All we have to do isn't try to see something for what it's not, to try to see it for what it truly is. To see the shadow for a shadow, not for all the bird or the dog. To see the shadow for what it truly is, a shadow. And then you can live every moment in utmost bliss. Someone's screaming at you, right? Why did you do this? Why did you do that? You're hearing it at what moment? This moment. Ear, vibration, sound arises. So what? If there's a mistake, of course, understand that and change, of course. But why should you be upset for a sound that arose at this moment? Yesterday he shouted at me. Today, you know, I don't think I can face him today. You know, he may still shout at me again. That's the past. Why live in fear? Go. Everything is happening, you know. It's only this moment. You fall down, you graze your knee. Pain arises at what moment? Pain arises at what moment? At this moment. But what do? I grazed my knee. You know, how long will it take to heal? You know, maybe just look by the size of the cut, it's going to take about a week. I'm going to have to wear a bandage for, I'm going to wear a plaster for a week. Oh no. And now you're projecting a future that's not there yet. And you're suffering so unnecessarily. Instead, accept it. You feel pain at what moment? This moment, right? Body comes into contact with physical contact, basically. Give rise to feeling. Pain. At which moment? This moment. So come to this moment. Come to this moment. Stop living in the past. Stop living in the future. Come to this moment. Because that is the reality. There is not, you know, the past is gone. The future, we have no idea. I mean, how many times have you planned the future and, you know, it's completely changed? I mean, how many of you planned to come to the monastery when you were a couple years back? Did you ever plan to come and stay in the monastery? No, you had a plan to, you know, do this, to retire, to become rich, to have a house, to do this. And look how life has treated you. Your plans all changed. Because that can only happen at which moment? This moment. Accept what happens at this moment. Accept your vipaka. And live happily. Okay, so today is Dakineyo. So I do need to set you off early. Right? Because you have an event to prepare for. So, this mental projection is what gives rise to this want. Right? So this mental, if I was to complete this very briefly. MP means mental projection. Right? The mental projection, we've talked about in the past, that would come from what? Jati. Right? So very, very quickly, Jati comes from what? Ignorance of the nature of nature. So technically, we don't need to worry about this half. Because that half will always happen for as long as this is there. These are two different, this is almost not two different processes. This is the same process. However, it is, you know, we don't need to worry about this. Because, you know, the moment you want something, you'll either be happy or sad. You can't stop that. Next time you eat chocolate, try to be sad about it. Oh no, I'm eating chocolate. Oh dear. And you can't be, because the moment you like it, you're going to like it. The moment you want it, you're going to like it. So there's no point of worrying about that. What we have to worry about is this. And the only cure for ignorance is what? What is the opposite of ignorance? Wisdom. Nothing. You have to change nothing but understand. No. See the process for what it is. Because if you want to expand this process, you know, you can go into the depths and say, oh, okay, ignorance, the attachment, the vexation, and all this. But very briefly, all we have to worry about is the process. We have to understand the process happens at what moment? But like I said, like I started, don't use the Dhamma, right, to give yourself excuses. Everything is, you know, today I'm going to, you know, as when I go home, I'm going to eat, you know, my favorite pizza. Why? Because, you know, everything is cause and effect. I have to check. I have to check if it's cause and effect. I have to check if this is true. So again, don't use the truth for your own benefit. Use the truth to get rid of this ignorance and ignorance alone. Because this truth in the hands of a malicious intent. See, you can't say in the hands of a wrong person. Who's a wrong person? What's a wrong person? What person is wrong? No, in the hands of a malicious intent. Who can have a malicious intent? Anyone. That's why there's no good or bad people. There's only good and bad intention. And how many of you can read minds? How many can read people's intentions? We don't. So we can't label people to be good or bad. So there's no malicious or bad people. Is that a malicious intent? The truth in the hands of a malicious intent is dangerous. That's why the 10 wrong views, the Michya Dittis, the 10 Michya Dittis come from what? Come from Dhamma itself. So the truth in the hands of malicious intent is dangerous. So have the intent of freeing oneself as well as freeing others. Okay. So today's Dakineya, as well as we have your ordination ceremony coming up as well. I mean, if you start living in this moment, you know you don't have enemies. You can't have enemies. You can't have enemies, because why? You live in what? This moment. Who is your enemy? Who is the best person ever? No, everyone. See, once you live in this moment, now everyone is equal. No one's bigger than another person. No one's better than the other person. You're seeing them for what they truly are, a mind and a body. Now you're enemy-less. Now you're friendful. You're enemy-less, but you're friendful, full of friends. That's why, in this monastery, we are, all together. We work as one. Because the moment, the more we get rid of this idea that I am best, I am the best, I am the greatest, or I am the worst, I am the worst person ever. And we get rid of this feeling of this ego. Now we all work. We all work with the flow of nature. That's why we can all work very well together, whether you're a monk, Sita Shravaka, Anagarika, Anagarika, we all work under the same teacher, working to help not just ourselves, but every person ever. Any person we meet. I mean, when's the last time you guys hoped, may this person wither in the deepest hells? No, what do you think? Or may this person, no matter what this person does, may they be happy. May they understand this. May they attain what? Supreme bliss of Nirvana. You don't have enemies anymore. Who is your enemy? The more you look at, you look at your past, and sometimes you think, why did we do such things? The other day, when I was talking to a group of people, they said, this is my, I have an enemy, right? And whenever I see my enemy, I get really angry. I'm like, how do you have an enemy? What has this person done? How can you get so angry to hurt the person? So, something has happened and they want to seek revenge. Because, they don't have the truth. They don't see the world for what it is. Therefore, they have enemies and they have, allies and enemies. They like their allies, they hate their enemies. But once you understand all this, now what? Everyone's a friend. Now you have compassion to whether you're a human, whether you're a whale, whether you're a dog, whether you're an ant. You have compassion to everyone, everything. Because you don't see anything to be different. You love everyone the same. They say, parents, they love their children equally. What nonsense. And we all know it's nonsense. Parents, we all know it's nonsense. There's always a time where you love one person more than the other. once you understand this, now a parent can love their children equally. Not just their children. They can love children equally. Whether it's theirs or whether it's a neighbor's, whether it's, you know, someone on the opposite side of the world. Not just children, but everyone. So, yes. Okay, I have to send you out before I get told off, right, by our event committee. So let's take a few moments to transfer merits and conclude today's session. Let's take a few moments to transfer the merits we've acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirith, listening to Dharma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. So first and foremost, let's remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt, Lord, with these teachings. And with immense gratitude, let's transfer the merits to Bhikshu, Bhikshunis, Upasakas, Upasakas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha and passed it down through the generation of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, to understand, to comprehend Dhamma. There's also taking my transfer merits to all the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including all chief priests of all the chapters who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and committed themselves to benefit of all sentient beings. Let's not forget, among them will be the monks and nuns residing in your local temples and nunneries, who have always been by your side, to thick and thin, come in and shine. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to Gusranasi, as well as the other monks resident at the monastery, as well as the Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let's take a moment to transfer our merits and express our gratitude to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teaching of the Buddha, be thereby translating Sam, shine them out to others, inviting us to join them. May the power of the merits, if any of them have been born in the willful planes, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds. Fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble footpath, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's take a moment to transfer merits to our devotees, friends in the monastery, for sake of merits, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes all of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, to those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, alms, words, medicines, as well as those who pass in their now hearts and their well wishes. May the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take one transfer merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands, wives, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews, nieces, friends, acquaintances, employees, and to all those who have helped us, supported us, assisted us in shape or form. By the power of these merits, may they be healed in physical and mental ailments. May they overcome any obstacles in their spiritual progress. May they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take one chance for merits to devas, brahmins, spirits, demons. Primarily the Sakudeva, as well as the numerous gods and deities who are committed to protect and fulfill the Sambhala Sasanam. Let's not forget that among them will be our garden deities to keep watch for us, to keep us out of harm's way. May the power of the merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So let's take one chance for merits to our ancestors, who have predeceased us, to all that have been friends and family to us in this simple long journey in Sansara. Let's all take one chance of merits to the armed forces as well as the police force who sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and the harmony of our nation. May all those lost lives in the war with a friend of her rejoice in the merits acquired today. Let's also take a moment chance of merits to all those lost their lives in natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides, pandemics, reminding ourselves among them will be those that have been friends and family to us in this even long journey in Sansara. May the power of the merits, if any of them have been born in the willful planes, may they redeem themselves and born in the blissful plane. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let's all resolve, may the power and blessing of all the merits acquired the other day, we have been a witness the event of many hundreds of thousands of Arhat Nuvansis, Arhat Mihin Nuvansis, in this blessed land. And finally, may through the power of all the merits acquired throughout the day, you and I and everyone who made this program a success become an Arhat Nuvansi or Arhat Mihin Nuvansi in this very life in the era of the Gautama, the Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessing of Noble Triple Gem be with you all. The members of the Mahasangha now transfer their blessing to you. Raga ginnin mitetnva Dvesha ginnin mitetnva Moha ginnin mitetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin සුකිත තරවෙත්වා මමද සියලු ලෝක සියලු සත්වයෝ නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුකිත තරවෙත්වා නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුකිත තරවෙත්වා නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුකිත තරවෙත්වා රාග ගිනි නිවේවා ද්වේෂ ගිනි නිවේවා මෝහ ගිනි නිවේවා නිවන් සැප ලැබේවා නිවන් සැප ලැබේවා නිවන් සැප ලැබේවා තුන්වන්ගේ සුවිසි අනන්ත මහා ගුණ බලෙන් සියලෝක සිය සත්‍යෝම නිබ්බාන පමසකින් සුවිතරෙත්තු.